This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, more on the New Orleans mayoral race and mental illness in the military. Joining us to discuss these topics and more from our New York bureau, Bob Meadows, writer with People magazine. Joining us via phone today, Robert George, editorial writer with the New York Post. And also with us, Callie Crossley. She's a social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press, seen in the Boston area. And she joins us from member station WGBH. In Boston or Cambridge or somewhere thereabouts. All right, folks, let's talk a little bit about what we just heard, and that's the interview with Ray Nagin, Robert George. What did you think of what you heard from Mayor Nagin?
Well, you know, I wish Mayor Nagin had been a little bit more, I think, forthcoming in his own role and his own culpability. I think in the tragedy with the, what is still the ongoing tragedy with New Orleans. He says that he saved lives and so forth, and that. That may be true, but it seems to me that there was a large failure of leadership. Obviously wasn't just his fault, and it wasn't just the governor's fault. But it seems that he seems to minimize his own role in the overall disaster. And I would be a little bit surprised if he wins re-election. But I know enough not to predict elections in Louisiana.
Callie, here's the interesting dynamic in all of this. It seems to me that all of the entities that were involved really are minimizing their role in the disaster, whether it be Ray Nagin and the local government, state, federal. No one really wants to say we weren't ready for this.
Absolutely, and particularly facing the hurricane season coming up. And he almost has to do that, because to now say, listen, some of the decisions I made were not good ones, makes him very, very vulnerable in this upcoming campaign. Remember, he's facing Mitch Landrieu, who is a homegrown boy and who knows what happened there. He was there on the ground as well in a different capacity. So, you know, he's going to have to be made to stand behind everything that he said, and everything that he said a lot of people have problems with. So at the same time though, I have to say I'm surprised that he made it this far. So I don't know what to predict.
Right.
Well, but that being said, Bob Meadows, here's the interesting point, and it always, and I say this all the time, depends on which prism you look through. While he was not a favorite of the African-American community during the first run, Ray Nagin made points in the African-American community when he stood up and got mad. Some will say that he lost the decorum that many politicians had or have, but many African-Americans said they liked when he got up and demanded the federal government get their act together and get down there and use a couple of curse words here and there. We noted that the book that is written by Mr. Brinkley suggested that he was holed up in the Hyatt Regency, yet former police chief Eddie Compass told us on this program that Mayor Nagin, particularly the first couple of days, was out in the streets with him dealing with the situation. So it all depends on which side of the fence you sit, I guess.
Sure, he was passionate at a time when you needed passion. You didn't need decorum. You needed somebody to actually stand up and say the things that he said, especially right at the end of Katrina, right as Katrina, in the days after it. And one of the things that I did like that he said, Ed, while you were talking to him, he said, "I take full responsibility." That is one thing that I want to make sure that we remember. He did say that, "I take full responsibility for what happened." Sure, he's going to tout his programs. And again, I was in New Orleans right as Katrina was coming, and I remember he said, "Get out." He said, "Don't come to the convention center." I remember all that stuff. People went there anyway. The evacuation plan may not have been what it should have been, but again, 90% of the people in New Orleans did get out.
Here's the biggest problem, Callie, and I asked the mayor this. I've asked others who are dealing with New Orleans this. The problem is the levee system. He suggested that they were running into a few problems. The Army Corps of Engineers has suggested that it's not going to totally be ready June 1. Heaven forbid if we have a huge hurricane system go.
Absolutely. There are some pretty tough decisions to be coming up, including whether or not to to get rid of all of the housing that's remaining in some of those neighborhoods, to get rid of that. I think that maybe voters will go in and think, some of them anyway, who can bring the political muscle here? Mm. Who can negotiate with all the powers that be, whether you're mad or not, whether you think it's unfair or not, to at least put us in a position to maybe start attacking those levees and making them be repaired in the way that they should be. Some people, I think, may think that, well, maybe Mitch Landrieu can. I think that while it was appropriate for maybe, some may think it was appropriate for Ray Nagin to get mad, the question is, what kind of political damage did he do so that he can't work across the board to bring the muscle that needs to happen there, to bring the resources that need to happen there, to really make that city safe again?
All right, let me, Robert, because I've got to move us along, take us to another embattled politician. That's one that takes to the airwaves tonight, and that's the President of the United States. In what we don't see often, and that's a rare primetime address from the Oval Office, particularly with this president, he's going to talk about the immigration, quote, problem, and talk about how he, Bob Meadows, is bringing the National Guard in to secure the Mexican border. Some will say that this is just window dressing.
Well, other people will say that it's militarization of the border, which, you know, many people do not want. As you mentioned, as it was mentioned, President of Mexico, Vicente Fox, wants to talk to Bush about that. Bush says this is going to be temporary. I don't believe it. His temporary things tend to run a lot longer than just temporary. And it's really a question of, is this what we want? I mean, there are plans in Congress to build fences, the Senate across the border to keep out illegal immigrants. But I do think, you know, last month when we had all these rallies, despite all the rallies, despite all the hundreds of thousands of people who turned out for them, still, I think the majority of Americans, they may actually support this kind of thing where you send the military down there to keep people out, because people don't mind if people come. They just want them to come legally.
Robert George, here's the problem. Many people are suggesting that we are, as we've seen our military stretched, stretching the National Guard, and that if, for instance, we have another problem during hurricane season on the Gulf Coast region, oftentimes National Guard troops are deployed. We are going to see them now deployed elsewhere. Are we stretching the National Guard now too thin?
I think that's a very strong possibility. However, the president is caught really right now between two opposing forces. I mean, he's got a conservative base, which possibly more so than anything, even including the out of control spending, is really up in arms over the immigration issue, and he wants to show that he's got some control on this. And if you, by bringing out the National Guard, that's one way of doing this. On the other hand, you've got governors who are also feeling literally overrun by having to deal with the immigration problem. Governor Schwarzenegger in California and Governor Richardson in New Mexico, both of them have said that they have really practical concerns about whether they want to allow their National Guard forces to be turned over to the federal control, because they've also been deploying them to deal with immigration problems themselves. So I think the main point about the Guard being overstretched is a serious concern. Right now, you've also got the president with a 29-30% approval rating feels that he has to do something to affect the issue that is eroding his base.
Callie, interestingly enough here, what we're seeing with all of this is a precarious dance by Republicans who often, if they're not on one political end of the spectrum or the other, finding not really knowing where to land.
Well, and President Bush is the prima ballerina. This really is a toothless tiger situation, because what you do by putting those National Guards there, and we've been told, according to the sources, that they're there for surveillance, not enforcement. So what you have is a federal Minuteman situation. Yeah. You know, that volunteer, you know, group that's going out there saying, we're watching, we don't have the authority to arrest anybody. So what good does that do? You know, you really are. I mean, he really is dancing around the issue. And you have the governors, as was pointed out, not happy with that. And I think what's interesting about this is that he has refused, or they have not allowed those governors to know exactly what the plan is for the National Guard troops, which makes that a little suspect.
Something very interesting coming out of Connecticut. Let me move to the next topic, because we'll continue, obviously, to watch this and talk about it tomorrow after he actually gives the speech. But this from the Hartford Courant, that's suggesting that they received information obtained under the Federal Freedom of Information Act that shows that U.S. military troops with severe psychological problems have been sent to Iraq or kept in combat. Some service members who eventually committed suicide had been kept on duty despite clear signs of mental distress, sometimes after being prescribed antidepressants and given little or no mental health counseling, Bob Meadows.
You know, that's actually a great segue from the previous one. Your original question was, are we stretching our troops too thin? I think this is a sign of that. As I said, the Army's having trouble recruiting. They can't get new soldiers in there, so they have to use what they have. I can't really blame the commanders. The president ordered them into this war, so they have to follow him. They have to use the soldiers that they can. But I'm a little surprised, because I remember, and I think we discussed it on the show a couple months ago, saying that for post-traumatic stress disorder, more soldiers were actually being treated and diagnosed with that because the Army was much more alert to these symptoms now. So I'm a little surprised by this coming out, which is kind of saying the opposite, that they're ignoring it.
Yeah, but the thing about this story is that the commander-in-chiefs, according to this story, are the ones making the decision about whether somebody is competent enough from a psychological perspective to stay in the field. I mean, I think that's dangerous. They are not competent to make that distinction. That's the work of a medical person. So, you know, it's scary to think about.
Well, indeed, and obviously they're not just endangering the specific troop, the specific individual, the person who's suffering under this. They're also endangering the efficiency and decorum and so forth of the entire battalion. Or troops there. I mean, you don't want to obviously have somebody that is psychologically unstable armed, lining up with other men in service. And so, I mean, I think it's a really disturbing report, and it's something that's going to have to be addressed.
Bob,
yeah, exactly. I can't agree more. This is something that's very dangerous, as Robert just said. And also, I think that we really have to look at what's going to happen to these soldiers once they come home. That's really one of the keys. I mean, not just they're in battle now, but what happens when they come home? We have to make sure that we're taking care of them.
All right. Let me quickly get to the last topic of the day, and that is a California State Senate passed a bill last week that would require textbooks in public schools to instruct students on contributions by gay and lesbians in the state's development there in California. Also, a contribution of transgender people. They believe that it will win, at least Democrats do, support in the General Assembly, and then we would see that move with real legislation. Forthwith, Robert George, do you see this as an important move that may work its way across the country?
I certainly hope not. I mean, of course, if you've got certain individuals who sort of specifically identify themselves as gay and lesbian and have made contributions, I have no problem in terms of putting them in the basic curriculum. But if a lot of this is sort of an ex post facto identification of this person was gay and that person was lesbian, when that was never a specific aspect of who they were or how they identified themselves, I think it just becomes more of this sort of kind of historical feel goodness, which I think helps the gay rights lobby, but I don't think it really helps us in learning, helping students learn anything really about the history of California or the history of the United States.
Yet, Callie, one would believe that the gay community, as in years past, African Americans fought to make sure that our contributions were put in historical context. One would believe that those that support this legislation would say the same.
Possibly, but this would be the first time that you have a group of people who are really held up because of their sexual orientation as opposed to their cultural orientation. And And what the gay rights movement was, as I understood it, was that we as gay people are bigger than that. We're more than our sexual orientation. That's how I read what had always been stated by advocacy groups. So this to me feels a little bit like going backwards, you know. So I'm not quite sure about that. I will say, add this. Here in Massachusetts, there are parents filing suit because, as you know, same-sex marriage is approved here. And in one of the classrooms, teacher did a story in which two characters, this was a fictional story, were married. And that seemed appropriate because in Massachusetts, this is legal. But parents are saying they were not alerted. So at least that will be avoided in California because everybody will know that this is happening.
One of the state senators who is the first openly gay member there in the Senate suggests that the bill would help shape attitudes of what gay people are really like, end quote.
Yeah, she says that it will ease tensions between gay and non-gay students. You know, I'm kind of up in the air on this, I have to say, because I have no trouble with people advocating for what they want. You know, if she wants this and people have passed, the assembly has passed this, you know, I think it's great. I don't know if it has much of a chance of passing Governor Schwarzenegger once it gets to him. I know that in whatever I've read about this, parents, of you know, the usual, the conservatives are completely against it. And parents are coming out and saying, you know, they hope it doesn't happen. And, you know, that it's that this is something that they should discuss in their house, things like that. You know, I do look at it in a way, you know, would I want this for black people? You know, if you know, you want black people noted. But again, it's kind of like, as long as gays are out of the closet, then yes, recognize what their accomplishments are.
We should note, interestingly enough, that a spokesperson from the governor's office says that the governor has not taken a position on this quite yet. All right. Robert George, Bob Meadows, Kelly Crossley, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. Just a quick note to the listeners, if you'd like to comment on any of the topics you've heard on the roundtable today or any of the stories that we give you here on News and Notes, please call us at 202-408-3330, or you can email us, log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us, and please be sure to tell us where you're writing from or calling from and how to pronounce your name. All right, folks, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.